Chapter 21. The Galactic Alliance has offered settlement terms to the new government of Corellia. We hope that those terms will be accepted, and that we can put an end to the blockade. We do not want war. This is our last chance for unity. Chief of State Cal Omus, speaking at a news conference. Coronet City, Spaceport. Fett occupied himself with carrying out panel checks on Slave One, and tried not to think about the fact that he had lost a daughter and acquired a granddaughter in a matter of a day. This was why it made sense to live alone. Families, wives, and kids were painful. They got in the way. Myrta was, as far as he knew or cared, still at the Solo's apartment. How had she fooled him for so long? He couldn't believe he hadn't worked out who she was. But if you hadn't seen your daughter for more than 50 years, there was no reason to recognize her daughter. You have a family, like it or not, you have a family. She might have had more than one child. What would he do about that, then? What if he had more grandchildren out there, all raised to hate him as thoroughly and efficiently as Myrta had been? No, he should have spotted it right away. When he looked into her dark eyes, he could see his father now. He could see his own eyes. He could see his own hatred, too. He resented the galaxy, and Jedi in particular, for having to grow up without a father. It wasn't surprising to see that hate and resentment reproduced faithfully in a granddaughter. Now he waited for Garan Bevin to shake down his network of contacts and tell him what Leia and Han Solo either didn't know or didn't want to tell him.
"Mandalore," said the comlink.
Fett pounced on it. "Bevin, what have you got for me?"
"I'm very sorry about Aelin, Bobica."
"I don't want your sympathy. I need intel."
"Aelin was being held by Jason Solo."
"I know that, but who was interrogating her?"
"Like I said, Jason Solo."
"I'll kill him." Fett felt his stomach settle into that cold place of detachment that preceded a strike. His thoughts fell immediately to the best weapons and strategies to add another Jedi lightsaber to his collection, the first that he would truly savor and not regard as just another job. "No. Remember what Dad taught you. Stay professional. Stay cool. Understand the enemy." "This had better be accurate."
"Mandalore," said Bevin, "this comes from the Coruscant Security Force. Some still think well of Mandalorians, thanks to your father's friends."
"I'm touched."
"You should be. The CSF bar is full of gossip about Jason Solo, because some of his Galactic Alliance Guard are ex-CSF men. Some of them really don't like his way of doing business."
Fett had taken little notice of Coruscant's descent into martial law yet again. He'd seen it all before, but now it was personal. "I want to know everything."
"Jason Solo is a regular little chakar."
"I take it that's bad."
"He uses Jedi techniques that don't quite fit their peace and justice image. Apparently one of his officers was complaining that he uses the Force to beat answers out of prisoners without laying a finger on them."
Something went ping in Fett's memory. "Go on."
"They say he killed Aelin with the power of his mind."
Bevin swallowed audibly.
"Just say the word and we'll find him."
"Jedi. Arrogant, power-hungry barves who don't care who they trample over. Nothing changes." "Not necessary."
"You're going to go after him yourself, then?"
"Aelin was a bounty hunter. She knew the risks."
"Bobica, you can't mean that—"
"I ought to, but I don't. It hurts. It doesn't hurt as bad as losing Dad, but it hurts somehow." "Forget Jason Solo. Leave him to me."
"He's a real piece of work. Word is that he ordered his twin sister to fire on a civilian vessel, and when she refused, he suspended her from duty. What a lovely, happy little family the Solos must be."
I think I know where this is going. What else? Anything, no matter how trivial it seems to you?
He doesn't even wear Jedi robes now. He struts around in a black uniform. Luke Skywalker's boy is his minion. That really upsets the CSF boys. The kid's 13.
He's a grown man, then.
Aruwe Tise see a 13-year-old as a child.
He rather enjoys his power even for a Jedi, this Jason Solo.
You know what they say about him? The older ones who remember the Empire say that it's like having his grandfather back. They say he fancies himself as the new Vader.
Ah. Fett's jumble of memories from nearly 40 years earlier fell into place. Ah. Anything else?
No, Mandalore. Is there anything else you want me to do?
Keep an eye out for a Mandalorian with gray armor and gray leather gloves, who claims to be a clone who fought at Geonosis. There was an audible pause.
I'll ask around.
And don't be tempted to go after the Solo's son. Leave him.
If you say so.
I say so. Fett sat staring at the control panel in Slave One's cockpit for a long time after Bevin had closed the link. So the Solos had a feud running within their own family, and their son was the man behind the new hardline politics of the Alliance. He thought he was the new Vader. And he killed prisoners without touching them. They didn't teach that at the Jedi Academy on Ossus. Fett was pretty sure of that. He'd taken his father's advice on learning how his enemies thought very seriously. He knew a lot about Jedi. I know plenty about Sith, too. Vader had been the master of causing pain and death without so much as a touch of his finger. Fett had rather liked Lord Vader. He paid well and he paid on time. He never asked his people to do what he wouldn't do himself. In some ways, Fett missed him. I've seen the galaxy ruled by Sith, and I've seen the galaxy ruled by Jedi. I still made a profit. In fact, I didn't really notice the difference, and the galaxy was still a mess at the end of it. It's not my problem, and it's not the Mandalorian's problem. So, Jason Solo wanted to be just like his grandfather. Maybe he wanted to be a Sith Lord, too. Maybe I'll let him. There was no better way of exacting revenge on the sanctimonious Jedi than to let them rip themselves apart all on their own. He wouldn't have to punish the Solos at all. It would take time, but that was fine. It was one more reason to make sure he beat his illness. He wanted to be around to see it. Corellian Exclusion Zone. Millennium Falcon inbound. Jason would have been happier flying alone. But with Thrakken Sal Solo dead, there was no longer a reason for keeping C-3PO and the Nogri away from his parents. Corellia knew the Solos were back.
Millennium Falcon, this is Alliance Warship Revival. You're approaching a total exclusion zone. Alter your course 90 degrees. I repeat, your course is taking you into a military exclusion zone, and we will open fire if you proceed.
Oh, dear, said C-3PO. Master Jason, do be careful.
Relax, I can handle this.
Jason switched to an open channel.
Revival, this is Colonel Jason Solo of the Galactic Alliance Guard.
Your transponder is showing as the Millennium Falcon, a Corellian registered vessel.
Apologies, Revival.
He sent an encrypted identification code to the warship's comm officer.
I have a rendezvous to make within Corellian space. They won't fire on the Falcon now that Sal Solo is gone.
We weren't advised of this, Colonel.
It's a classified operation. Put me through to your commanding officer, and I'll have him verify it.
Won't be necessary, sir. Just identify yourself clearly on your return.
I'll be back in a different ship. Don't be too quick to open fire, will you?
Revival didn't jump to his command, but that was a good thing. They were taking security seriously. He steered through the line and into the exclusion zone that had trapped an orbiting ring of industrial stations and fleet bases in limbo. Cut off, both from contact with Corellia itself and from outside supply lines. It couldn't have been much fun now on board the shipyard stations. Civilian workers did week-long shifts and were then shuttled home, but they weren't going anywhere now, and they weren't being resupplied. Sooner or later, their food would run out. Jason had heard that they were already on limited water rations. As he'd calculated, recycling water met only some of their normal consumption needs. When Jason crossed the planet-side limit of the exclusion zone, he switched to the civilian transponder, looking to any ground-based traffic control like one more small ship that had beaten the blockade. Lots did. They just didn't make much of a difference to the overall supply situation, that was all. Once clear, he took up station at the rendezvous point and went aft to the cargo bay for a final check on Aelin Vell's body bag, lying in the conservator on a repulsor gurney. C-3PO trotted along behind him, all anxiety.
"Allow me, Master Jason."
Jason held up his hand to the droid in polite refusal of help. "It's okay, 3PO, I'll do it." "What's happening to me?" Jason pondered how he had moved from the kind of Jedi that Luke was proud of to one who could kill prisoners and even other Jedi. Somewhere in that 5 years of seeking Force knowledge, something had changed him. He wondered at what point he would be able to bring Lumia into the open. His parents' shuttle came alongside the Falcon and docked with her cargo hatch. Leia was first into the bay, and although her first move was to hug him, it felt formal, distant, as if she was holding back. His father trailed behind, looking broken. There was no other word for it. He made no attempt to embrace him. "Aye." Han glanced past him at C-3PO. He didn't normally take that much notice of the droid. "Aye, 3PO. Are the Nogri with you?" Jason ignored the snub. "Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad." "What did you say at times like this?" He plunged in. "Yes, they're in the cabin. Have you heard from Jaina?" "No." Leia cut in.
"Do you want to tell us something?"
Jaina hadn't told them about the court-martial then.
"No, she's fine. Not flying combat missions."
If she wanted to keep the matter to herself, that was fine by him.
"I'm sure Zack's keeping an eye on her."
"Is there anything else you want to tell us, Jason?"
Leia was talking to him as if he were a kid who'd done something terrible.
"Anything at all?"
"What exactly?"
Han sighed with that roll of the head that always told Jason he was in trouble. "Son, we're collecting a corpse from you. That should give you a clue."
"She was hired to kill you. She never got the chance."
Jason opened the conservator hatch, and cold air rolled out. He indicated the large black bag lying flat on the Durasteel gurney.
"What more is there to say?"
Han now stood between him and his mother. "I need to know what happened, for my own sanity." Leia scratched one brow, clearly embarrassed.
"I think we both need to know, Jason."
"Okay, Dad. I was interrogating her, and she died. Do you really want to know the details?"
"It kind of makes a difference, Jason."
"I used a mind invasion technique to make her talk. She must have had some physical weakness. She died of an aneurysm."
"Can we take a look?"
Leia asked.
"We have to hand her over to Fett. We don't want any surprises."
She'd look anyway. Jason had to face this sooner or later. He decided sooner was better. He hauled out the gurney, then opened the bag down its gription seam.
"There," he said.
Leia and Han looked. His mother simply swallowed hard, but his father turned away with his hands on his hips, head bowed. Jason waited while Leia composed herself, then fastened the seam again.
"Did you put those bruises on her face?"
"This is the price you pay." He could almost hear Lumia reminding him, but it would take a long time for him to forget the look of utter betrayal on his mother's face at that moment.
This felt like his lowest ebb.
I believe so.
You believe so?
Yes.
Leia nodded a few times, silent, staring off to one side.
Okay. Not much more I can say, then.
She took the repulsor gurney's handle and moved the body back into the conservator.
We'd better be going.
Jason waited for his father to say something, but Han wouldn't even turn around. Jason went to the hatch to board the vessel they'd flown to the RV point and expected Han to relent and say something, but he didn't.
I can't just end it like this. I'll make him speak to me. I have to. Why can't he understand?
Did you really kill Thrakken, Dad?
Han turned and looked him in the eye, but there was no spark of recognition.
Hey, maybe it runs in the family. If I can kill in cold blood, so can my boy. I'm glad we understand each other.
Jason went to take his father's arm.
Dad, don't do this.
Han shook it off.
Get away from me.
Dan?
I don't know who you are, but you aren't my son anymore.
My Jason would never do the kind of stuff you do.
Get out. I don't want to know any more.
Jason's last sight of his parents was his father turning his back and his mother standing by the hatch as the doors closed, staring at him as if she was about to burst into tears.
Dad's right. What am I?
He shook off the misery and shame as one of those weaknesses of the old Jason Solo, and reminded himself that his life wasn't his own now. His destiny was Sith. He turned the battered vessel toward the blockade and allowed himself the brief luxury of reaching out in the Force to Tenel Ka and Alana while he was still far, far from Lumia. GAG Headquarters, Coruscant. Captain Shevu was swearing under his breath as he stared at a data screen in the administration office. A clerical droid stood to one side of the desk, forlorn and silent, occasionally reaching out an arm and withdrawing it quickly each time Shevu looked up and glared at it. Ben hovered in the doorway, wondering if Shevu was going to round on him, too. The officer wasn't happy.
"Do you know when Colonel Solo's due back, sir?"
"Don't say Jason, not in front of his men.
He's late."
"Colonel Solo comes and goes as he pleases," said Shevu.
"Can I help with anything?"
"Are you any good at finding dead bodies?"
"Well..."
"Sorry, Ben."
Shevu dismissed the droid with a sharp look.
"We appear to have lost a dead prisoner. And seeing as they don't stroll out of here unaided, I'm trying to find them. You can't file an incident report without a body."
Ben's stomach sank.
"Aelin Habur, right?"
"Right. Nobody signed out the body, but it's gone."
"And so is Jason. But he was going to see Uncle Han."
Ben tried to think of an answer that would take away the nagging dread he felt about Jason and Aelin Habur.
"Does it matter?"
Shevu had a way of dropping his chin and staring unblinking at you that made it clear he thought you were an idiot.
"Yes, Ben. Prisoners who die in custody always matter. And you don't just dump them like garbage. What do you know about her?"
Ben shrugged.
"She was angry and scared."
"I hear from my CSF colleagues that someone was asking questions about her."
"Is she someone important?"
"I don't know. Do you?"
Ben shook his head. He got the feeling that Shevu was being cautious about what he said to him, and, obvious this, that he didn't like Jason very much.
"Why don't you go and visit your parents?"
Shevu made it sound like an order.
"If Colonel Solo comes back in the meantime, I'll tell him I sent you home."
It was good to have the decision made for him. Ben wondered if the events of recent days would show on his face so clearly that his father could read them. He hoped so. He wasn't sure that he could bottle them up much longer. Mom would understand better. She'd told him a few stories about being the Emperor's hand. She'd done some bad things, she said, but it hadn't made her a bad person. So perhaps Jason was like that. Perhaps he just did a few things that were terrible, but he could learn from them and never do them again.
Ben called first and got an automated answer. The Jedi Council was in session, so he went to the temple and waited in the archives for an hour. The meeting went on, and he knew better than to even try to interrupt. So he occupied himself looking for data on Aelin Habur. The Jedi archives were vast, an odd mix of ancient texts and hard data. They said that between the archives and the meditation areas, Jedi could discover anything about the outer and inner worlds that they wanted to if they put their minds to it. He didn't find an Aelin Habur in any public records, not even in the Kifar records. But he found a lot of Aelins and Haburs. He found thousands. The size of the task daunted him, and he wondered if it mattered whether he found out or not. Then he found himself looking for the names Nalani and Brisha. He'd made a deal with himself not to ask any more questions about that missing chunk of time out at Bimio that had somehow ended with the Jedi Knight Nalani Din and a weird woman called Brisha both getting killed. He accepted that a lot of things had happened that he didn't fully understand, but they still puzzled him, and Jacen wasn't telling him. How had they died? How did Brisha and Nalani die? He had to know. The feeling inside him said that what had happened to Aelin Habur meant he had to ask, because it changed everything. They were connected somehow. Nalani was easy to find, because he knew she was a Jedi, and that narrowed his search. But there were thousands of Brishas, too, some names, some places, and he didn't have the time to go through them all. He wasn't even sure what he was looking for, or if he would even recognize it if he saw it. He made up his mind to ask Jacen when the time seemed right. Ben took the turbo lift to the council chamber floor and waited in the lobby until the meeting broke up. His parents, deep in conversation, walked down the corridor as if they hadn't spotted him, and he wondered if he had accidentally mastered the art of disguising his presence. Funny, he'd resented being invisible to grown-ups until only a few weeks ago, always ignored like a kid. Now he wanted that invisibility in the Force. But not right then. At that moment he really wanted his mother and father to know exactly where he was and to help him find out where he was going. He wanted to tell them how bad he felt about Aelin Habur and Jacen. But that was wrong. If he had a problem with Jacen, he ought to do things like a grown-up and have it out with him like a man, before whining to his mom and dad. Besides, there were other things he wanted to talk about.
"Hi, honey," said Mara. She looked him up and down, and he wished he had changed out of his uniform. "What's wrong? Have you been waiting long?"
Ben hugged her and then turned to his father to give him an awkward embrace. He wasn't sure how he had to behave with him now. Most of the time, he'd wanted not to be just Luke and Mara Skywalker's kid. But at that moment, he was almost relieved that he was.
"Can we go have lunch, Dad?"
"Sure. Something really is wrong, isn't it?" Ben should have told them right away, but he'd thought about it a little more, and he was ready now. He needed to talk.
"I killed someone," he said, "and I feel really bad about it."